I suspect most of us have had times of confusion when we've tried to find our way around a city that we don't know, maybe in a country whose language we don't understand, we can't understand the signs, and we become confused. Or maybe we sit down to write an examination and we don't understand the questions, never mind the answers. Maybe we're confused as we look around our world and we wonder, why is this happening? Why do people hate each other so much? We're confused at what's going on. Maybe we try and understand our friend and what they've done. Or maybe it's our husband or our wife. Why are they like that? Why do they decide to do that? I'm confused. Well, we live in a world where there is a great deal of confusion about vital things. And it can be very confusing for a young person growing up in our world, or even an adult living in our world. And this confusion includes things like, does God exist? Is there a God? If there is a God, what's he like? There's confusion about human sexuality. And so, sex outside marriage is quite common. Same-sex marriage, homosexuality, transgender is becoming more and more something that people say is quite normal. So there's confusion about human sexuality. There's confusion about what does it mean to be human. And so you have the areas of abortion, assisted suicide, how we treat the immigrants who come. What does it mean to be human? Then there's the question, what's wrong with our world? What is the problem with our world? And people put forward different answers. Is there hope for our world? Now, I believe that Genesis 1-5 has very important things to say about all of these areas. Now, I'm not going to claim that we're going to answer all of these questions, but I believe that Genesis 1-5 has very important things to say about these matters. And they are to give us foundation truths for our lives, so we're not confused. They don't have all the answers, and sometimes we come, particularly to Genesis 1, with the wrong questions. Genesis 1 is not going to give us the answers to some of those questions. It was never intended to give us those answers. So sometimes we come with the wrong questions. The truths we see in Genesis 1-5 are filled out in the rest of the Bible. Here is the beginning of the truth about God. And the rest of the Bible tells us more about what God is like. And of course, the climax is in the person and the work of Jesus. There we get the fullest picture of what God is like. But in Genesis 1-5, we have the beginning of getting the picture of what God is like. So I think we need to see important things about Genesis 1. So let's just look at the first verse, meet your maker. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, that's a statement that you are very familiar with, and it's very easy to take it as, well, that's straightforward, it's obvious. And yet, that is a revolutionary statement. It contradicts ancient thinking, and it contradicts much of modern thinking. It is a revolutionary statement. In the beginning, God created
the heavens and the earth. It's a foundational statement because the Bible begins with God. That's how the story of the Bible begins. In the beginning, God. Chapter 1 of Genesis has 35 references to God. When you read through the chapter, 35 references to God, because the whole emphasis is God. It's focusing on God. It's not really looking at how he made the world or even why he made the world. That's not the main focus. The main focus is who made the world. That's the main focus of Genesis 1. And the rest of the Bible is also about God. So Genesis 1:1 is about God. Genesis 1 is about God. And the whole of the Bible is about God. And the rest of the Bible unpacks. What sort of God is this? What are his plans? What are his promises? And as I said, the climax is Jesus. And what we're going to be celebrating later, his death and resurrection. Our greatest need is to know God. That's the greatest need of the human being. Genesis 1 and 2 show us that you and I were made to know God and enjoy him, and to live under his loving and his wise rule. And Genesis 3:11 tells us what happens when you go outside, when you turn your back on God. Genesis 3:11 gives a terrible picture of human beings who've rejected God and the consequence. There was a famous Christian in the early centuries after Jesus. He had a wonderful mother who prayed for him. And he went wild as a young person. And then he began to feel that he needed to look for the truth. And so he searched in different places to try and find the truth. And he wasn't satisfied in where he was looking. And then eventually he came to Christian faith. The prayers of his mother were answered. And he said this, "You have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless till they find their rest in you." That was Augustine. "You have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until we find their rest in you." You and I were created to know God and to walk with him each day, to enjoy him. The rest of the Bible gives us examples of people trusting and obeying God and the way that they walked with God. But it also tells us of people turning their back on God and the consequences in their lives. The rest of the Bible also shows us God's outrageous desire that we should know him, so that he calls Israel to himself, and then Jesus comes to make it possible for us to know God. Now, why should God bother? It's because he made us to know him, and he wants us to know him. Well, let's look at the subversive message of Genesis 1. Genesis 1 challenges much of ancient thinking and much of modern thinking. So that, first of all, there is one eternal God. In the beginning, God. There's one God. The ancients had many gods. Every country, every nation had their gods. There was a whole multitude of gods. And in our modern world, you can go to India, and there are many, many gods in the Hindu religion. But also in our Western world, people are saying there's no God. So Genesis 1 challenges that. No, in the beginning, God. There is a God. He is the eternal God. The second thing you see in Genesis 1 is that the sun, the moon, and the stars are created. In the ancient world, they were gods. The sun, the moon, and the stars were gods that had power to create. And so you find in the different countries, they were seen as the gods. What's amazing to me today is in the modern world, the faith that people have in astrology, that the stars somehow control your lives. It's superstition. They are simply created things. The stars don't have the power to control, to rule our lives. And yet, modern, Western human beings place so much emphasis there. But also, when you think of maybe scientific programs that you see on television, this word nature seems to be like a god. That nature controls this, nature does this, nature does that. It's almost as if it's a god. Whereas Genesis 1 is saying, no, these are all created things. It's God who is the creator. Just have a look at Genesis 1, verse 16. God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day, and the lesser light to govern the night. Now notice what he's saying. He's not saying God made two great lights, the sun and the moon. He doesn't even give them names. What he's doing, he's saying they are simply created things. They don't have power. I'm not going to give them names. It's just the greater light and the lesser light. Notice also what he says. He also made the stars. It's almost as if it's an afterthought. Here he made these two lights, the sun and the moon, and he also made the stars. They don't have the power to control us. They are created things. Thirdly, God creates without effort. In the ancient world, the gods had to wrestle with great sea monsters, and there was great battles that took place, and eventually the gods made what is there. Sometimes they fought with each other, and they used the bodies of each other to create the things that are there. In our modern world, there's uncertainty about the past and about the future. Whereas Genesis 1 says God created. Now, when you look at Genesis 1, you notice the word created occurs three times, verse 1, verse 21, and verse 27. And it's the word in Hebrew which means created without effort. So if you look at verse 21, so God created the great creatures of the sea. Whereas the ancient thinking was that there had to be a battle with these great sea monsters. And somehow they had to overcome these sea monsters, and then they're not sure in the future if whether there's going to be chaos again, and the sea monsters will again come to power. Whereas here, Genesis 1, God creates without effort, and again you see, and God said, and it was so. And God said, and it was so. He simply spoke, and it happened. In other words, it's showing us a God of real power. He doesn't have to flex his muscles to create. He doesn't have to sweat and wrestle and battle away. He simply creates without effort. And then we notice that humans are the pinnacle of God's creation. God creates them in his image to be stewards of the world. In the ancient world, the humans were slaves. They were the slaves of the gods, so that their purpose was to make buildings for the gods, the temples, and then to give them food. So they were the slaves. Whereas Genesis 1 says, no, no. Here are very special creation, the pinnacle of God's creation, made in God's image, made to care for his creation. In our modern age, human beings are sometimes just seen as another animal. We're just the same as any other animal. A little bit different, but basically we're an animal. And Genesis 1 challenges that and says, no, no, we are different. We are special in that we're made in God's image. Also, Genesis 1, creation is ordered. It's rational. It's comprehensible. That's what makes science possible. And then, finally, it's complete. We can have confidence. When you read through Genesis 1, it's very interesting that you find the number 7 coming many times. Just two instances. You have 7 days. 7 is a number of completeness. And you have God mentioned 35 times. Now, all of us mathematicians know that 7 times 5 is 35. And there are other instances. 7 is the number of completeness, perfection. Whereas in the ancient world, in Babylon, 7 was an unlucky number. And there was a lot of superstition, a lot of fear. And in our modern world, in fact, it's a bad thing to be certain. You need to be a bit uncertain. But also, there's a desire to control. I want to control my life. And then you realize you can't control what happens to you. Whereas Genesis 1 says, you can be confident. You put your trust in this God who created everything. You can be confident. You don't have to be anxious or wonder what's going to happen. He knows. He created. Well, moving from that to the life-affirming message of Genesis 1. As the Israelites would have read Genesis 1, they would have been hugely strengthened in their faith, because they were surrounded by the nations with these many gods, and Genesis 1 is giving us a clear picture of what this God is like. Also, even when they experienced the exile, they were taken away to Babylon, they would have maybe thought, maybe the gods of Babylon are bigger than our God. That's why we've been defeated and taken away. And Genesis 1 comes and says, no, no, this God is eternal. He's in control. And they would have been reminded that God is eternal. God has always been. Many things change. Nations rise to power and then go down. God is always there. In the beginning, God. He is eternal. Listen to Psalm 90 and verse 2. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. And whatever you and I are facing, we need to remember, God is eternal. He is everlasting. He is always there. Secondly, he is all-powerful. He is the creator. His words are never idle. You and I speak many idle words. We make many promises that in the end we can't keep, because we don't have the power to keep them. But Genesis 1 reminds us, God's word makes things happen. God said, and it was so. God said, and it was so. His word is powerful. He has the power and wisdom to carry out his plans. Thirdly, this is God's world. He not only created it, He sustains it, and he enjoys it. We saw that beautiful picture of the astronauts looking back at Earth and marveling at Earth. Well, I believe that God looks at his creation, and he loves it. He delights in it. He enjoys his handiwork. He enjoys us, the pinnacle of his handiwork. There is no place outside of his power to act. The gods of Egypt, Babylon, Rome, our modern gods are nothing compared with this God. This is his world. There is not one square inch of this world that is outside of his power. And fourthly, God is their God. God is our God. The people of Israel had a relationship with God. First of all, through creation, which is what we've been looking at today. God created them. But secondly, through salvation. Listen to Exodus 6, verse 6 and 7. Therefore say to the Israelites, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will free you from being slaves to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with mighty acts of judgment. I will take you as my own people, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. God saved them so that they could be his people. I am your God, you are my people. Now that's true for every Christian. God has brought us into this relationship with himself. I am your God, you are my people. It's what Jesus has made possible. That's what we're celebrating as we celebrate communion. Jesus died and rose again so that we could know God and have this relationship with him. And so I want to just finish with two questions. First of all, do you know God? This God that we've been thinking about in Genesis 1, the creator of the universe, the eternal, all-powerful God. Do you know this God? If you're serious about knowing him, he will be found by you. Or rather, he will find you. Jeremiah 29 reminds us, For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. If you want to know the God of Genesis 1, he will find you. He will reveal himself to you. What you need to do is to seek him with all your heart. And I would urge you to take one of the Gospels. Read about Jesus, about what God is like, as you see Jesus and him walking among people and then dying and rising again. The second question is for those of us who have put our trust in Jesus. Are you trusting and obeying God? This God who created everything. Are you trusting him for your day-to-day life? Are you obeying what he has told you in his word? Because he is all-wise, all-powerful. Well, I want to just close with recommending a free DVD. It's called Evidence for God. Building a positive, practical, and credible case for God's existence. And you can get it from tenofthose.com. It looks at our world, at history, at ethics, place of reason and personal experience. Now, it might answer the questions you're going to put now that Paul and I won't be able to answer. But what I want to say is that that's not what Genesis 1 is about. Genesis 1 is not trying to give evidence for God. It simply assumes God. In the beginning, God. But there is plenty of evidence, and maybe this DVD can help you in answering questions that your friends have. And so all you have to do is contact tenofthose.com and you pay for the postage, that's all. So, questions.
This question asks, God is eternal. How do we go about having a relationship with an eternal God, as we're just human?
Well, I think that's why it's so important to focus on Jesus. Because this eternal God came into our world. He became a human being. People were able to touch him. People were able to hear his words and see what he did. And so Jesus is the full revelation of this eternal God. Without that, yes, we would struggle. We would have the words in the Bible that are telling us about this God, but here you have the clear picture of what God is like. So I think the person of Jesus is where we need to focus.
I don't have any other questions on the phone here, but does anybody have a question that they would like to ask? Put your hand up if you would. Roger, you've always... Yes, yeah. Good, okay. Well, it's...
Harold, what is your best explanation of who was the writer of Genesis? I know it was God, it's God's word, but who do we think actually was used as an instrument by God to write Genesis?
I think for many centuries, it was believed that it was Moses. Moses put down what is there in Genesis. And there might have been additions that after his time, so that talking about the death of Moses, the first five books are seen to be by Moses, and obviously the end of Deuteronomy talks about the death of Moses, and so they would need to have been somebody else who put that down. But Genesis would for centuries really have been seen to have been by Moses, and I don't see any reason why he should not be seen as the author of it.
He had the privilege of a special revelation reading,
yeah,
because he was so close to Jehovah, wasn't he?
So close to God in many ways, and a real trusted instrument of God, servant of God, that this was entrusted to him. I can understand that.
Obviously, he was not there in Genesis 1, so there needed to be that revelation then from God to him. He was not there at the beginning. But yeah, I think God revealed this truth to him, and he put it down, and God guided him as he guided the other authors of the Bible.
Any more questions? If you do have questions, then the DVD that Harold mentioned earlier will be a good opportunity to find out more about creation and the answers that we might have to those questions that we've got about creation and where God fits in with all of that.
So next week we're looking at actually our world. What's so special about our world?
Okay, thank you.